Welcome back, everybody, to the Heartland Politics Podcast, where we explore politics, economics, culture here in the Midwest Heartland. This show is sponsored and distributed by WVIK, the flagship national public radio station in the Quad City region of eastern Iowa and northwestern Illinois, and I'm your host, Robin Johnson. Well, we've had several candidates in recent weeks from both sides of the river and both parties to discuss their campaigns, and today I want to shift my focus to give an overview of the election in Illinois. And to do that, I'm lucky to have one of the best analysts of Illinois politics around, who's going to take a look at things on the ballot and some other issues going on in Illinois politics and government. He's Rick Pearson, longtime political reporter for the Chicago Tribune, Blackhawks fan extraordinaire, and a person who was really my original inspiration for a career in radio broadcasting, which I'm doing, for which I'm very grateful. Rick.
And you're still doing it, and I'm not. So there you go.
Well, come on. We'll tag team.
Fair enough. Thanks for having me, Robin.
Well, it's, in Iowa, we're looking at very competitive races up and down the ballot, from the presidential race to congressional races to a very competitive Senate race. It doesn't seem that way in Illinois, but let's talk anyway. At the top of the ballot, we of course have Biden and Trump. I don't know if there's been any polling, but it's likely that Biden's going to be in pretty good shape. But then we've got a Senate race where an interesting aspect has been added to it, where Dick Durbin's facing a Republican, but also a third party challenge.
That's right. There's an independent campaign being mounted by Willie Wilson, who has previously run for mayor unsuccessfully of Chicago, even mounted a kind of a quixotic bid for the Democratic nomination for president at one point. Wilson is known in the city. He's known in the African-American community. He hosts a gospel show on WGN television on Sunday mornings. And he's a multimillionaire. He owns a glove distribution company, like for food service purposes, and basically has gloves made in China and distributes them. But he's also known for distributing cash. He has in the past, and basically he's aligned himself primarily with Republicans. He's gone into churches to offer to give money to people for paying their property taxes. He's been outside the Cook County Jail offering money to help people pay their bail bonds. Most recently, he's been going to a number of public housing units in the Chicago area, distributing $25 Walmart gift cards so they can buy groceries. And I know that he's given at least one church $10,000 to help weather itself through the pandemic. So he's gotten about 10% of the vote in the mayoral race, which is nothing to sneeze at. He has shown up on some cable ads, not very distinguishable of anything, some billboards, those kinds of things. But the one issue with, as far as a Democrat, and that obviously Durbin has, you know, huge war chest and huge name recognition statewide. But if you're trying to beat a Democrat in Illinois, the game plan is always to try to hold the margins down for that Democrat in Chicago. And so there is that kind of a factor here that's at play with Wilson's candidacy.
Yeah, the idea would be that he would run up a good margin of the African-American vote, which would hold down Durbin's statewide totals. And Durbin 6 years ago ran and won, but it wasn't a very really strong victory, I would say.
No, and you know, it's kind of interesting because you have the fact that here's Durbin, who's from southern Illinois. He represented Springfield in Congress, grew up in Granite City, St. Louis area, in the Metro East area. But, you know, now you've got vast stretches of Illinois downstate that have gone Republican, and I'm not sure that people even consider Durbin truly a downstater anymore. And, you know, part of that comes with the fact here is the guy who's the number two Democrat in the United States Senate, has taken on a much more magnified national role. And, I mean, still works, still, you know, back in Illinois doing lots of things, but I don't know that he is considered as downstate friendly as he once was, given the kind of shifting ideologies of Illinois.
Yeah. Well, it'll be an interesting aspect to this race that, you know, normally, if it was a two-person race, Durbin would be the prohibitive favorite. I've had his opponent, Mark Curran, on my show last week, and Senator Durbin's people have committed to have him on as well. But
and Curran's, you know, Curran's an interesting creature. I mean, mm-hmm. There's a certain amount of credibility there, the fact that he was Lake County Sheriff, he was a Democrat, and then he switched Republican. But Curran's said some very, very strange things in this campaign. I mean, when John Lewis died, he tweeted out that Lewis wasn't really a civil rights icon because he supported abortion. I mean, it's Curran has made a number of strange statements, and basically attributes his fundamental beliefs to his Catholic upbringing. It's almost like a Catholicism candidacy rather than a Republican candidacy.
Well, other than the presidential race and the U.S. Senate race, we've got some congressional races, and a lot of them are competitive races are up in the northern part of the state, where in your area. Do any of those look like, I know there's three or four up there, do any of them look like they could potentially flip a seat from, I think Democrats hold all of them right now, could they flip to Republican, any of them?
The word I'm getting is that these Democrats, two Democrats basically, in the west suburbs of Chicago and the far west and northwest suburbs of Chicago, two Democrats flipped those seats from Republicans 2 years ago. Sean Kasten and Lauren Underwood, and the word I'm getting is that the Republicans that are challenging them are not really doing that well in the polling, haven't mounted that strong a challenge, and the Democratic incumbents are awash with cash. There's a third race, which is in central Illinois, the 13th congressional district, which is held by Republican Rodney Davis of Taylorville in the Springfield area, and Betsy Dirksen-Londrigan is the Democrat running again. That's a rematch from 2 years ago. She came within about 2,000 votes of beating Davis last time, and that's probably, I would say, the most hyped-up congressional race in the state right now is that 13th congressional district.
Well, it depends on turnout. There seems to be an extraordinary interest in this race, and I just participated in a talk on Zoom by a Republican pollster, Bill McInturf, whose data shows this could be the biggest turnout in American history. So that could really be interesting in where that turnout comes from and who it benefits.
Well, and then in that 13th district, for example, you do have a number of universities, and what the unknown factor there is, you know, where is the student vote? Are they even on campus in this kind of pandemic atmosphere? And is there the possibility that a big student vote that Betsy Londrigan was looking for, is that going to materialize at all? So, I mean, all kinds of different factors going into this.
Another item on the ballot is a constitutional amendment, which you've been writing about a lot about lately, and that's the fair tax or progressive tax constitutional amendment to change Illinois from a flat rate income tax to a graduated rate. How's that looking? What share with our listeners what percentage of the vote that needs and how that's kind of looking right now and kind of how the money's poured into this thing recently.
Well, the hurdle to change the Constitution has always been high. The bar is 60% approval, 3/5 approval. There's another method, too, of 50% of those voting total in the election. But 60% is basically the standard. And this was always going to be tough. And, yeah, you've got This is the signature item of Democratic Governor J.B. Pritzker. He has backed the proponents of this campaign with $56.5 million. Now, Pritzker's an heir to the Hyatt Hotel fortune, and he's worth $3.4 billion. But on the other side, you've got Republican and Republican-aligned business interests that have formed their anti-amendment coalition. And you've got Ken Griffin, who is the founder and CEO of Citadel Hedge Fund and Investments. He is largely viewed as the wealthiest man in Illinois. He's worth $15 billion. And he's poured in, as of just a few days ago, he's now at almost $47 million in the campaign against it. So you've got, you not only have the battle over this amendment and whether replacing a flat rate tax that applies to everyone regardless of income with a graduated rate tax that the rates get larger as the income grows. You get the question of fairness there, but you also have a battle of the billionaires going on.
Does the language of the amendment, do you know, does it have the specific rates and income levels?
No. See, that's one of the things, is the amendment itself does not. The amendment merely, merely, although it would be a significant change, but it strikes out the previous language that taxes will be assessed on a flat rate and replaces it that to give the General Assembly permission to tax varying levels of income at different rates. Now, we should point out that the legislature has already approved and Governor Pritzker has signed a graduated rate schedule that would take effect if this amendment is adopted. And supporters are using that to say, if this is adopted, people who make $250,000 or less, roughly 97% of all Illinoisans, those people would pay at least the same rate as they do now, if not less. And that's the principal of, argument of proponents, as well as how they view a flat tax as being more regressive on lower incomes and at a time of income inequality. There's a fairness argument there. The opponents say that this will hurt business, it'll hurt jobs, it'll help an Illinois exodus of the wealthy and put more of a demand on redoing those schedules and capturing lower incomes as part of an income tax increase. So you've really had a whole lot of volleying back and forth, multi-million dollar TV ad campaigns that are virtually nonstop, and sometimes lately with the both sides kind of using older people, business people, regular people, whatever, they're almost indistinguishable from themselves until you find out at the last 10 seconds whether it's the yes folks or the no folks.
So if this passes, will this solve all of Illinois' very deep, deep financial problems? Or
No. It won't. And Illinois' financial structural problems are much deeper than this would raise. About $3.2 billion. We actually aren't necessarily sure anymore how much it would raise, given how the pandemic has and business shutdowns and those kinds of things have affected Illinois taxpayers. But you've got, there have been commitments, and there's a lot of rhetoric on both sides. There's the pro side is saying, vote for this and reduce property taxes. Well, this amendment doesn't have anything to do with property taxes. The idea is, well, if you give schools more money, then maybe they'll hold off on raising property taxes. But there's no direct property tax relief if you vote for it. On the other side, you've got the antis saying that you vote for this, you're opening the door for a tax on retirement income. Well, Illinois doesn't tax retirees now. There's nothing in the amendment that would tax retirees in the future. The legislature could do that at any time. So there's a lot of overhyped rhetoric on both sides on this.
And the lieutenant governor came out and seemed to, I don't know if the word threaten is right, but seemed to say that if this doesn't pass, that the state may have to hike their income taxes, which would hit everybody.
Right. What she basically said was if this amendment doesn't pass, then it'd be a 20% across the board tax hike on everybody, regardless of income, raising the 4.95% personal rate to about 5.95%. That would also raise about $3.6 billion, $4 billion. The thing with that is, Pritzker has talked about that as a possibility if the amendment failed, but Pritzker's also talked about that or 15% across the board cuts or a combination of the two. What was striking in the lieutenant governor's remarks was that she never mentioned cuts. She was just saying, if you don't vote for this, this is what you're going to face. And that's what I thought was basically the news there, is that she wasn't talking cuts. And, you know, and one of the arguments in writing about this and talking to people about it is, you know, yes, Illinois has been a fiscal basket case for a long time. But this also comes down to a question of trust. And do you trust government? And, you know, do you trust government that those rates are going to hold? They're not going to affect the middle income and lower incomes. And, you know, that goes to kind of a gut kind of issue there. And in this kind of atmosphere that we live in, and given all of Illinois' history, that's a really tough question to ask voters.
Especially right now when you have 3 out of 57 state senators under indictment.
Right, correct. And then you also have a federal investigation has touched upon veteran House Speaker and Democratic State Chairman Michael Madigan.
That's exactly what I was going to turn to, is that...
See, I knew that. That's why I was leading right in for you
just
there.
Just like two excellent dancers here, right? Yeah, I mean, with 3 state senators under indictment and then this massive federal investigation that you've described seems to be pointing towards Speaker Madigan, who's also the Democratic Party chairman in Illinois. What describe to our listeners what this is about and how it's tied into a major utility in Illinois.
Well, just recently, Commonwealth Edison, which is the state's largest utility, entered a deferred plea agreement with the federal government and paid a $200 million fine, the largest fine ever levied in the U.S. District Court of Northern Illinois. They paid this fine in acknowledging that they had participated in a near decade-long scheme of trying to influence Michael Madigan's support for legislation by hiring his top political aides, precinct workers, former staff members, and some of them not even for a real legitimate job, but just to curry favor with Madigan. Madigan has said he's not aware of that activity. He has not been formally charged with anything. He's denied any impropriety involving any legislation that was approved involving Commonwealth Edison. And we should also say Commonwealth Edison is, you know, as the state's largest utility, they have a lot of influence in Springfield, and it's not just Democrats. It's also with Republicans. So when there's been legislation in the past that they've wanted, it's passed with pretty healthy bipartisan support.
Do you sense that the House Democrats who vote to elect Madigan Speaker, are they holding with him, or does there seem to be some slippage in support?
I think there's some slippage in support, but I don't think it's as, because we're still in this pre-election mode here, and the choice of a speaker doesn't come until January post-election. I'm curious to know how after the election, how things shake out, because for a lot of Democrats, they don't even want to talk about it. They want to focus on November 3rd. And the tax amendment on electing Joe Biden over Donald Trump on their local races. They don't really want to deal with this Madigan stuff, and they view it as a distraction. But once the distraction, as they call it, goes away, I mean, you've had, you know, more than a handful of Democratic legislators saying that he ought to step down as Speaker, that he ought to step down as party chairman, or step down as both. Most recently, you had a ex-urban Democratic state representative, a member of Madigan's caucus, Stephanie Kifowitz from Oswego, announced she was running for Speaker. It shows no demonstrable support from her colleagues, and you know, it's questionable that she could ever become Speaker, but nonetheless, that's the kind of thing that tends to open the door for the potential of others. Madigan has said he is not stepping down, he's done nothing wrong, and that as this proceeds, he will explain things. But there's been a special legislative committee that's been set up to look into this, and Madigan has basically taken the fifth, saying, I haven't done anything wrong, and doesn't want to do anything that might affect the federal investigation.
You wonder if this investigation, along with the events of, a year or two ago, when some sexual harassment claims were made against his chief of staff, who resigned, as well as some other folks close to him, if this won't motivate a lot of the more progressive suburban and city of Chicago women legislators to rise up.
Well, and particularly, I think, when you mention the suburban women, because those are, you know, legislators from areas that have only now started shifting more Democratic from traditionally Republican. And, you know, Mike Madigan's never been a popular figure. I mean, but it wasn't that long ago. Most people didn't even know who he was. But, you know, now, because of our political environment and efforts by Republicans to kind of use him as the poster child for everything that's wrong in the state, I mean, he's the longest serving state house speaker in the nation. He's been there since 1983 as speaker, with the exception of 2 years. I mean, he served in the legislature since 1971. But when you see things like, you know, as we saw, Robin, with the Me Too, so many times we've seen politicians that, I guess, the generational changes have been so great, but the politics being practiced by some of these people has not changed. And, I think we saw that basically with George Ryan as governor of Illinois, and the fundraising scandal that eventually led him to prison was an example of old school how you raise campaign cash. And he accommodated the changing world in some ways ideologically, but when it came to old school politics, he never left that school.
I guess this brings us back to our final topic today, to come full circle. Madigan is casting a shadow over an important race involving a local person here in the Quad Cities, and that's Supreme Court Justice Tom Kilbright, who's on the ballot for retention. There's been a group that's been set up, dark money funding, where you don't know where it's coming from, to oppose Kilbright. He's got a threshold he's got to meet as well. What's your take on this race?
Well, and it's not just a Quad Cities race. That judicial district goes all the way east to Will County in the Chicago suburbs. So we're getting bombarded by the ads on Chicago TV as well. These issues of judicial retention are somewhat complicated for voters, because they don't really understand that it's not voting for or against somebody. In a traditional campaign role, there aren't two people on the ballot. It's just, should this justice be retained? And I'm not sure. To me, it seems hard to win a non-retention battle, just because you've just got that name there. And then, of course, that's what the opposition is fiercely fighting. Of course, you know, you have traditional business groups, contending that he's a tool of the Madigan machine and Democrats like that, and Democratic interests like the trial lawyers. But you've also had, you know, a few prominent Republicans step up, and including former colleagues, in support of his retention on the bench, which makes for an interesting kind of juxtaposition here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's unfortunate that that kind of big money and dark money's gotten involved in judicial races, but it's a fact of life, I guess, everywhere, not just here in Illinois. But as you said, this is the third judicial district, which goes across I-80, basically, to the Indiana border and encompasses, I don't know, 20-some counties.
Right.
So, it'll be interesting, another facet to the fall election, which is just about a month away here. Rick Pearson, political reporter from the Chicago Tribune, has been our guest today, and really appreciate you taking the time to be on and get away from, I'm sure, what's been a very busy schedule covering everything to talk Illinois politics with us today.
Robin, it's always a pleasure. Hopefully one of these days we can get back to doing it in person.
Sounds good to me.
And I know exactly where we'll meet.
I do too. All right. Thanks again.
Thank you.